Right, we are now live. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Radio EduTalk. This is Loose Learners on Radio EduTalk. My name is John Johnson, and with me, as usual, is Marianne Finnis. Good evening, Marianne.
Hello, John. Good evening. We are live.
We are, and all the wee dials are burbling away. That looks as if there's audio leaving my kitchen. We'll just hope for the best.
So we're in your kitchen today.
Yeah, it's just the day is echoey, more echoey of my rooms. So we're both teachers of a sort. I teach in primary and Marianne teaches in higher ed. And we're both very interested in using the internet. So this show is, I suppose, loosely, because it's Loose Learners, loosely organised around the internet and education. And we always have a question in mind. And it's the same question every week. And the question is the internet good or bad for education? And we have the same answer every week, which is yes.
Yes.
Yes, a big yes, it is. It's good and bad. And we're kind of looking at the different things. We usually broadcast on EduTalk on the first Wednesday of each month at 8 o'clock p.m. UK time. So we were back, I guess, on the 4th of April. So, Marianne, the topic tonight, we've said, is the state of blogging 2018, which kind of sounds like a quite portentous topic. But I guess it's really we've been reading various bits about blogging online recently. Yeah, always reading, bloggers are always blogging about blogging. This idea of small B blogging, which was posted by a guy, Tom Critchlow, at tomcritchlow.com. And if you look at the show notes for this post, there's a link to that. And do you want to give us your sort of take on small B blogging, Marianne?
Well, I came across the post via you when you posted the link on Twitter, and I was curious about the name. Hmm. I thought, oh well, you know, that what interesting. I wonder what this is, and you know how one usually does the kind of, you know, go click, and I started to read, and I got really interested. And the basic idea, I guess, that, you know, we hear a lot about how blogging isn't what it once was, usually from the oldies who'd been at it forever. You know, I remember the days when it wasn't quite like it once was, you know, kind of thing. But this took a different take, I thought, well, and that's what I thought it was interesting, which was to say, actually, you know, yes, it's absolutely right. It's not what it used to be. There are things that have changed. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it is it's worse than it was. And the idea of this small B blogging is to be contrasted with how, I guess, things were perceived, at least, to be in the past, where you could write a blog post and it could go viral immediately and the whole world could see it. And, of course, things are not like that because the internet has grown and things, you know, the people that are using it, it's just not possible to do that. So he talks about the notion of building small audiences and thinking about your blog as a place to kind of do your thinking is how I see it. So you've got a few people, and it could be, in the hundreds, it could be in the, you know, low thousands, I think he says, a few people that you are kind of doing some collective thinking with, where you're putting your own, all your stuff there for you to refer to, for you to refine. So it becomes like like your little mind online. Mm. That's how I saw it, and I thought that was I'm clearly not quoting, it's my memory of it, and the bit that I took away. We've got a few quotes which we can read out a bit later, but that's the basic idea of the small B versus the big B blogging, which, you know, reaches the world, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Did I get it? Did I understand it, sir?
I think so. I mean, that's basically what I took from it. The thing is that my blogging is probably even smaller than small then, because I don't reach hundreds or thousands as an audience, and I don't think I ever have. And I was kind of greatly encouraged, and I've lost the link to this post. It was an American educator, but I saw a link on Aaron Davis, who's an Australian educator, pointing to this guy. And this guy has been blogging seriously for a long time about education. Mm-hmm. And one of his points was that his audience, and he looks at his stats, is quite low. He's been blogging for over 10 years. He sits mm-hmm. down every Saturday, gets up mm-hmm. early and sat at the weekend, and writes seriously. So I think he takes himself reasonably seriously as a writer. And unfortunately, I can't track down this post, but basically he was saying the same sort of thing, that the idea that, you know, you're not, most of us are not going to have a huge audience. There's only, you know, there's only one daring fireball and two cockies and, you know, these big giant blogs, there's not that many.
And actually, you know, many people are saying actually these bigger ones, and in fact I've been reading that these bigger ones that are kind of closing down as well, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, the other one I thought linked very much from it was Kotke, who's been a one of these huge link bloggers for a long time, and he was interviewed somewhere and was going, he was like the last blog standing, because I think he's been blogging for 20 years now. Nearly anybody who's seen a YouTube link or something interesting will, you know, find something on Kotke of value. But it's very much a broadcast mode. Like many of the big bloggers, he's not got comments turned on. And it's his livelihood and his business. And I guess that's the biggest of big B blogging, is this idea that you have this huge audience and you can run reasonably small, not huge adverts for some of these guys. The other one is Daring Fireball, who also said something about, you know, this idea, and Daring Fireball was a great site if you're interested in Mac stuff. The adverts are almost invisible, but the guy makes a good living out of it. And I think, you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, and I find them really valuable, but there's maybe value to be gained by blogging with your pals or people with a similar interest and dipping in and out of different...
Well, I think that there is, that this guy that you just mentioned, that he now says that he's gone to membership, hasn't he? And he's still managing to kind of, you know, to make money out of that from membership rather than adverts.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, with the patron thing and various things, you know, a lot of people are kind of doing that, trying to see if can they, you know, can they make money out of in a small way, I guess, you know, out of the having membership and so on. But of course, I guess that the advertising probably brings in more money. But or used to, if you got a big enough audience, I guess that's the point, isn't it? But I tell you one thing, because I think as an educator you'd like this. You sent through this link via Twitter, which I saw, read. I thought, oh, well, that's an interesting strategy as a way to think about blogging differently.
Mm-hmm.
Because I felt that this way of thinking about blogging could really help people who are maybe starting out and who are thinking about what the hell do I do or how do I get to have, you know, the big blog, right?
Mm-hmm.
But one of the downsides of, you know, how do I get to have the big blog is that people are often quite scared when it's not a thing they've done, and they feel, you know, how am I going to create this thing that's going to, you know, make me famous? So there's the kind of imagined audience thing that can cause anxiety. So anyway, I saw that, read it, and I thought it was interesting. And I've got one of my students wants to kind of look at, is doing independent studies around the mindfulness and blogging. And how the two can come together, kind of like the still web kind of things. And I gave her the link that you sent through. And she's been doing this now for a few months, and she's dithering. You know, like people dither when they are thinking about starting their blog, and they go, but I haven't looked at all the WordPress tutorials yet, and I haven't quite, and I don't know what theme I'm going to get, and I'm really not sure, because I wonder if I should call it this or I should call, you know how people do at the beginning. And And so within less than 4 days of me sending this thing, she sent me a link to her first post. And she said, "This I think this small bee blogging has got a lot going for it. I can do that."
Yeah. Uh-huh. It doesn't need to be hugely important. And I guess a lot of that sort of traffic went away to Facebook and Twitter over the last few years. But there certainly seems to be a downturn in people posting to Facebook. Certainly, I don't know about Twitter, but I've read a bit about the numbers of people posting just because of all the negative publicity, I think, around the US elections and, you know, the algorithm stuff and all the rest of it. And there seems to be less people. There maybe there's even going to be a revival of blogging.
But if that is the case, then, you know, your entry point has got to be, I was going to say just as easy, because then, you know, the people that would do all their kind of posting to Facebook, let's take that because it allows more space and all that, are not necessarily the people that would set up the kind of blogging blog.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, they can understand the notion of, I'm just going to get a few of my mates together, and we can kind of pull a little group together, and I can quote them, and they can quote me, and we can together kind of explore ideas, a bit like the Federated Wiki thing. I guess it would be a similar thing to the small bee blogging, although it has other qualities, but, you know, it's that sense of building off ideas and working together to building off everybody else's ideas as well as your own. Because one of the things that the guy, this Tom Critchlow guy, says is this thing of having an accessible archive, doesn't he? So that you can keep, and you do this quite a lot in your things, where, you know, you can keep going, and Alan Levine does, and other people who are doing a lot of the educational blogging, having access to your archives so that you can connect back and forth, and you can go, oh, I wrote about this then, how do I think about it now, and I could refine this and I can change that. And I think it makes it more accessible then for non-techie people.
Yeah, well, this idea of having an archive and be able to look back, over the end of last week, all the schools around here were shut down because of the snow. And we've had report cards to do, and I couldn't get into school and, you know, read through jotters for good work and things that the children had done so that I can, you know, mention things and point stuff out. But my class use blogs for e-portfolios, and it was just great because I could just go through and look at their stuff and find artwork they'd done, their wee pieces of writing they'd put on, and what they thought about them, and it was really, really useful. Now, they're in a group, the only people that are looking at their blogs, because they're not private, but they're not public either, you know, they're sort of halfway in between, is themselves, each other, and me, and maybe, you know, other teachers in the school, but there only is two of them, so there's not a lot of an audience. But they've really taken to it. And I've just found it really valuable to be able to look back and look at what they were doing. And they've got, over the year, they've got quite a nice record of what they're doing. And I find that myself. I quite often search my own blog. You know, in so much that I would just type the blog URL /?s=, whatever I'm looking for, because that takes you to WordPress per search.
Well, now, go back a step. If somebody's listening to us who has not got a clue what you've just said, would you explain?
Yeah, so if you use WordPress, and most people that blog now do, I think, there's a search box usually in WordPress, and it's very handy. You can go to your blog, you can type in something you were writing about or thinking about last year, robots, and it'll search through your blog and pull back all the posts about robots. But if you've got autocomplete or something working on your browser, you can just type the URL of your blog into the browser, and at the end of it put ?s for search equals, and whatever you're searching, and hit return, and it goes straight to the search page. It's maybe slightly geeky, but it's really useful.
It's lovely. I think that's lovely.
Because it saves you a whole page load, really. You get right in there. But I find that time and again really useful for
Well, it's interesting because, you know, what you're describing about your students and my student that I was telling you about, who's, you know, it really helped her. Mm-hmm. It really helped her get started. But then also once she kind of got going, she also said and I'd mentioned it to so-and-so and so-and-so, because I thought if the three of them started too, then, you know, between the three of us, and then that could grow and we could have a little community. And I thought, how interesting.
Yeah.
Because, isn't it? Because it's sort of, so then that, what we are saying is actually use it as a way to archive and store, so then you can find your own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Then, you know, kind of, if you're already doing it, I guess, then you and I say, you know, we already have a kind of different people and so on that we know online, and then we can add to those as and when. But for people who are really new to it, I think this idea of the small bee blog is really helpful. Is really, really helpful. I've been thinking about it in this way for myself quite a long time. I'd refer to it as, well, for me, it's just like my office space.
Mm.
Or I'd go, I'd really just have it exactly as you described it. You know, I go, oh, I wrote about this. And there was that reference. What reference? Oh, I think I wrote about that on that post. Let me search for that. And then I find the reference, or, you know, that kind of thing. So you're using it really as an archive for yourself.
Yeah.
And these are different kind of frames around the whole idea of blogging from the way it used to be.
Yeah, you know, it's actually valuable just as an audience of one, and then any engagement you get is a plus one for that. You know, I mean, you could do it in a file on your computer and not share it with anybody else, and still get the goodness. But I think a couple of things is that I think you describe things better if you're writing in a public space. You know, you make more of an effort to make it understandable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not particularly articulate, and I certainly wouldn't describe myself as a writer, but when I write a blog post, if it's explaining something or a bit of thinking or something like that, or a comment in somebody else's link, I'll think a wee bit about it, and a good bit more than I would if I was just taking a note in a notebook. So I think that's the first plus one. And the second is, if you even have a wee audience, you'll get engagement on some things, and then that becomes interesting, because something that you think is one way, somebody else that you know and maybe value will push you back on it, or echo it, or, you know, all sorts of things, augment it with a link or idea of their own. And
of course, you can always do the other thing too. So, you know, if you do want to reach more people and to do it more as a kind of showcase, which, you know, as you said, right, there's nothing wrong with that. If that's, you know, if you want to use it as your kind of, you know, this is the place I write. And we'll talk about that a little bit later, when maybe if we get time, because, you know, there are some quite famous writers that have turned to blogging as a genre and start to use it in that way. But there's nothing wrong with that. But the question is, if you really wanted to grow an audience and do the usual kind of, you know, Instagram, Facebook, blah, 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 you can still do that. And people do, don't they?
Yeah.
Post to Twitter, post to this, or do an excerpt and put something else. So if you wanted to work on the growing audience thing, which I, you know, I would assume, say, take, you know, some of my students who are just starting, initially it makes it manageable for them to say, I'm just going to do my little small bee blogging, right? But as you say, as maybe things grow and somebody gets interested and so on, they, oh, I think I might start another one, or start something that will have, you know, a blog that would have, you know, a bit, I suppose, a bit like I did with the Still Web, you know, something that actually is a project.
Yeah.
And people, you know, and then you can grow with that, which, you know, I guess is different from the way I was too young then, so I don't know how blogging used to be.
Yeah, you and me both, Maria. I certainly know when I started, which I started probably blogging seriously about 13 years ago, I think. I saw it as this idea of audience being important, and conversation being important. And I think those things still are, but the other thing I think that I've realised over time is that it's actually what I think that's been important, and the way that blogging makes you think. Now, you mentioned a famous writer, and I'm just looking at the note you put in the note, and this is about Ursula Le Guin, who just was all over the blogosphere and the newspapers and all the rest of it, because she just died, she passed away just a few weeks ago. And I guess, I mean, I'm not, I think there's probably two or three science fiction writers I've read more than one book by, but Ursula Le Guin, at one point, I read quite a lot of, and she's, I think, quite a wonderful writer, for both children and adults. And do you want to explain?
Well, she, she's one of my kind of, you know, writers that I really kind of admire, and you know, the Wizard of Earthsea is one of my favorite books ever, and I read when I was young, and I still would say is I love it. So I love her as a writer. I used to also. She did quite a lot of work helping new writers learn to write. So she wrote stuff on the craft. You know, I think one of the books she wrote was something about navigating the craft or something like this. And I used to use that quite a lot when I used to run writing workshops in the business school I worked in. And I didn't know until recently, when I read about her death, that towards the later part of her life, she had practically stopped writing in long form, as we would call it, and writing books and things. And that actually she'd set up this blog, and that's where she was mostly where she was doing her writing. And I think a little while ago, I don't remember the name of the book, but we can put it in the notes. They've gathered up a lot of the kind of the bestest blogs from blog posts from her blog, and actually mostly she used to write quite a lot about her cat, which and kind of create stories. I'm guessing I haven't read any of it, but I guess, you know, that was, and the whole point about the so I read this, it was a New Republic article that was talking about the idea of the idea of blogging and the idea that actually, I guess, speaking to your point about how it helps you express yourself in a particular way, I guess she found that having a blog and writing the kind of short form that it is was a very different thing, but something where she could still be creative and she could still be, you know, able to I guess, engage at the kind of level that she used to because of the quality of her writing anyway. And clearly this was towards the end of her life. So she had all the experience, and from this new Republic article, they quote and they talk, so they quote her to say that, you know, age, she insists, makes one a diminished thing, and I'm quoting this now. Likewise, a blog does not possess the same artistic or persuasive power as a novel. Reading about Le Guin's cat will not change your life the way that reading about her strange freer worlds might. Blog posts are short, topical, and often polemical in a narrow way. On her blog, Le Guin talks about the many of the same things that she addresses in her stories. But the form itself, this is what the article says, but the form itself is a diminished thing. And that's why I thought it was interesting to bring that in as a kind of contrast to what we've been talking about, because this could be an essay question, right? You know, the form itself is a diminished thing. Discuss. when you're thinking about, you know, comparing it with other forms of writing. And of course, if we had, you know, some of these very important bloggers here, they would be outraged at me reading this out.
Yeah, well, you can see that the sort of blogosphere is there's some people who they don't like the word blogger, they use the word writer. I'm quite interested that when Ursula Le Guin was, it says in this article, was 87 when she started to blog, or when she finished writing.
I think it's wonderful.
Which is pretty mad. And the book that seems to have pulled some of her blogging together, been edited together, is called No Time to Spare.
In the title, yes, no yeah. Time to spare.
So that's a pretty good title. But I think
I see the link. So I'm guessing that of course when you get to 87 and you've spent a lifetime crafting meticulously, because some of her worlds, right, that she creates amazing things, and it would take you years, right, to create one of these things. And so the book being called No Time to Spare is, I guess, a kind of idea that at 87,
yeah,
you know, you kind of, come on, right? Let's just get to the point.
Yeah.
I like that. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah. But I think that's another pushback against the idea that blogging is finished with, if somebody who is a really respected writer still thinks it's worth cranking up a blog and posting stuff. So I think if that's the case, then the state of blogging is not as terrible as has been reported. And another interesting blogger who's always been a blogger, and you popped in the notes, is Dave Weiner, who's probably there's arguments about who was the very first blogger, but Dave Weiner certainly was very near the start. He was involved in the creation of RSS and podcasting, and he still blogs in very much the same way. He writes a mixture of short and long posts. He writes about what interests him, so it can veer off to the movies or politics or technology. It's very personal, I think, or his stances and various things are quite personal. He's been in a few fights with various people online, but I find that's a fascinating blog, and he obviously is not doing it for money. There's no advertising on it. He just obviously does it because he's interested in spreading ideas and thinking with other people and putting his ideas out there. And has been doing since, I've no idea when, but a good long time. I think that's quite an interesting person to look at as well, and compare and contrast perhaps with the big B bloggers. I mean, certainly I guess Dave Weiner would be a big beast in the blogging world, but he's maybe not a big capital B blogger in the same way that Kotke is, or some of these other guys who do it for that's their living. He's certainly not doing that. I think that's...
Well, I think it's quite interesting, isn't it? Because it's that thing about, like, what do you compare it with? Because, I mean, you can be, Dave Weiner and, you know, there are quite a few people that, you know, are doing it. They do it because they have a particular kind of niche, a particular thing that they just like to talk about, think about, and so on, but they can be large in terms of the audience they have, how they've been doing it, the reputation they have, and so on. But that's not the same thing as the kind of big B blogging idea, which is more about the kind of selling large organizations, in a sense, isn't it? It's kind of the big thing. The reason I'm saying that was because I pulled out one of the quotes from the small B blogging thing, where it says, you know, that he does the comparisons, and he says, you know, so I challenge you to think clearly about the many disparate networks you're part of and think about the ideas you might want to offer those networks that you don't want to get lost in the feed, ideas that you might want to return to. So this is the stuff that we were just talking about. Think about how writing with and for the network, which I have questions about, but that's probably another story. Think about how writing with and for the network might enable you to start blogging, which is kind of like the example that I was just giving you. But then he goes on to say, forget the big B blogging model, forget Medium's promise of page views and claps. You know how Medium does the how many claps do you want to give the, this thing? Forget the guest post on Inc., Forbes, and Entrepreneur. Forget Fast Company. Forget Fast Content. Because I think that the contrast that he's making is with the kind of, you know, the large, the being read in the kind of, you know, multi-blogging things like Medium, where, you know, you go and just tell somebody the latest, you know, life strategy that you discovered and it's going to change your life. Not. But, and people can give you many claps.
Yeah, that seemed particularly crazy. The value of you know, giving people more likes, basically, from one person. I don't know. That seems kind of weird. You know, if you like it or you don't like it, that seems fine.
I have to tell you, and I have to confess, if ever, I can't remember, you don't write much on Medium, do you? I do some, you know, but if ever I'm reading Medium stories, they only ever get one clap from
me. I think that's enough. You just really saying to somebody, yeah, I like that. I haven't got anything to say particularly. but I'm just letting you know I liked it, and I think that seems fine. But the idea that we're competing for a vast number of likes is probably something that,
But taking it back, you know, to the education idea and a new and young people starting and so on, you know, that it is quite daunting to say, look at an interface like Medium's, right? Quite daunting, isn't it, to look at that and say, I'm going to write something?
Well,
versus you having your own little space where you do your small B, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the reasons people use things like Medium is it's slightly easier than, technically, than setting up, but it's probably slightly harder in the non-technical sense you're talking about, and the sort of getting the courage up to put pen to paper. And not get lost in the wash of, you know, huge number of posts. I mean, it does definitely seem to be a site for bloggers who want to build a big audience and very much aimed around that. I was kind of in that it's sort of, again, from this Tom Critchlow's guy, he talks about these small communities and we with different overlaps. He says they overlap in weird and wonderful ways. And I think that's one of the interesting things about this small blogging is that, you know, I would generally think, because I'm a teacher and I vaguely, mostly blog about educational technology, that's my readership would be other people with the same sort of interests. Mm-hmm. But every so often you get a wild card or somebody's interested in something else you say, or, you know, you've probably got various interlinking channels that spread out in he says weird and wonderful ways. I would say probably inefficient, and that they've got all, you're putting all these wee feeders out, and you maybe get people to talk to who are not in the same field as you, but can then talk about something that's of interest to you, and you can see it fits in with your topic.
Which, of course, is the way, in a way, is kind of like the attraction and the reason, you know, for those that go, oh, it isn't what it used to be, and, you know, and things have changed, and, you know, it's all been taken over by Facebook. It's changed, but that's because it has that sense of strange synchronicity that happens. Kind of still have, I don't know about Facebook because I don't know about Facebook anymore, but certainly on Twitter, it still happens.
Yeah.
And so it is that sort of sense of, oh, who might I meet, that then attracts people to that, versus the you know, I'm just going to be in my blog and wait for somebody to come and comment. Because actually, mostly they don't comment.
No, I mean,
and that is something that is, I understand, is very different from the way it used to be, when people used to kind of, you know, gather around certain blogs, I guess.
Yeah, and I wonder, I mean, it's probably not enough time to talk about it today, but I've been posting a lot of shorter stuff that would have used to post it on Twitter onto my blog, and using Microblog, which is a kind of, among other things, a network, I've talked about it before, a network of smaller blogs, and I begin to notice that I get more of a chat, that I'm commenting in more people's blogs, more people are commenting in mine, and I'm getting a bit of cross-fertilisation, ideas coming in from other areas. So I wonder if there's a sort of resurgence at the moment, or beginnings, or the possibility of a resurgence of this idea of having a community, or a series of communities, or some sort of Venn diagram of communities where people connect and flow in and out of, that might be actually coming back as people get disinterested in maybe the bigger networks, as their sort of raison d'etre becomes more apparent, that it is, you know, share value or selling adverts or whatever.
Well, I wonder if, you know, what you find in Microblog, because I it's one of those things I've been meaning to since it started, to get going, and I haven't had an opportunity to. But I wonder if what you get in Microblog is not dissimilar to one of the reasons for people moving to semi-private Slack channels.
Yeah,
because it's when I'm sure you are, you know, member of various of those, and often, really they end up being like mini Twitters around, you know, the stuff that you are interested in.
Yeah,
because it's not in, you know, yes, the ones that I use for work and so on, for teamwork and all that, you know, that's different. But there are some, like there are educational Slacks, and like the Creative Commons Slack, where really it's not that different from being on Twitter. It's just that it's a little bit smaller.
Yeah, well, one of the things I think that Microblog points towards is the possibility of having different aggregations and communities made up of collections of blogs which aggregate together, so that you can go into your classroom aggregation, and you can see posts from lots of different blogs about classroom, or you could go into your movies one, or your books one, but you just use your own blog for everything and push the different things to different places and different wee communities, which I think
kind of like a combination of kind of blog, social media, and your kind of what would be your RSS reader type thing, where you can get folders, and like we do within our reader and things.
Yeah, but if there was a sort of shared one that you sort of officially or some way joined, a bit like, I mean, we roll back to DS106 and the way that the aggregation works in there. I know certainly in Scotland, in the University of Dundee, there's all their teacher students, people that are going to become trainee teachers, are encouraged to blog, and they aggregate it together into one big aggregation. And that, you know, it seems to be very useful for them. It's usually fascinating to look. There's a lot of stuff going on there that's really interesting. And I'd love to see that sort of thing being duplicated for lots of different things. Yeah. So I think,
well, we are over time, but not too much.
No, not bad. I think basically I would say that, you know, the state of blogging is fragmented, interesting, and reasonably healthy. I would go to there.
But I also think there is something about the kind of the new people that are being more attracted to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they don't have the history of you, you know, you oldies, and they don't have the history of, you know, they don't even know, possibly, you know, even that what they're doing is blogging, really. And I think that is interesting to see what the form can then turn into when you're no longer trying to do the melancholic thing or the nostalgia thing of going back to what it once was. Because I think that then something like what Ursula Le Guin is done and other people, I'm sure, you know, are doing, then it allows the form to evolve into something else and adding the new platforms that you're discussing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it can then, you know, that's what it makes you a bit more hopeful, right? Because it makes you think it could evolve into something new.
Yeah, certainly. That would be, I think it probably always is. It's just that some people who were doing really well out of one model didn't notice that, you know, everything's moving around about them. There certainly seems to be plenty of folk taking it up. Plenty of people moving from silos like Twitter and Facebook into blogging. So the challenge in that original post we were talking about, which was by Tom Critchlow, was go forth and small B blog. So not maybe a slogan you could write on a flag at the front of an army, but go forth and small B blog sounds like a good way to finish up. So will we just say goodnight. We'll be back on the 4th of April?
Yep.
Which will be a Wednesday. I'll hang up the broadcast now. So cheers, folks.